From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. Getting this hour of old-time radio underway with an episode of The Henry Morgan Show, starring comedian and satirist Henry Morgan, who became famous, or infamous as the case might be, for sticking it to the program sponsor, the Eversharp Company, as you'll hear during the live commercials within this broadcast. From June 18th of 1947 on ABC, the program's title is The Question Man, but my all-time favorite Henry Morgan sketch is featured on this episode. Listen for the all-night disc jockey. It's The Henry Morgan Show, opening up this edition of the Upstate Radio Theater.
The Henry Morgan Show? Eversharp, manufacturer of Eversharp chick injector razors and blades and famous Eversharp precision writing instruments, brings you the Henry Morgan Show, featuring Bernie Green and his orchestra and a few surprises.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. Pity you people here in the studio had to miss that Hope Crosby thing. Boy, that was funny. Well, you're very kind anyway. Anybody here tonight from Brooklyn? Fred? Gee, I'm awfully sorry. That's the last mention of Brooklyn on the program, and you probably won't applaud anymore, but thanks for what you've done so far. Nice of you. Anybody here from Newark? There's a bus outside leaving in 5 minutes. Is there anybody, if I didn't know, is there anybody here from the Eversharp Company? They sit up there. At home, you can't tell where up there is, but we know, don't we? It's up there in that booth. That's executives, you know. They come every week, and on the way home, their wives explain the jokes to them. All the vice presidents of the Razor Company are here tonight. I can see barely the one in charge of edges. There's one vice president of Eversharp who started out with the company as an office boy. And today, he's a vice president. Still an office boy. And supposed to be errand boy. I ruined it somehow. You know how those people come to a broadcast? Or why? Free tickets. That's all. And they invite their friends, too. They say, why don't you come with us to the Henry Morgan Show? We own him. Yeah, we own him. That's a laugh. But who can laugh? Things are going... Radio isn't too bad, though. Really, it isn't. After you're on the air a while, you get to be pretty well known. Lots of people come up to you, shake your hand, ask you for free samples. It's a very nice feeling, everybody knowing who you are and everything. Like, I was at a party the other evening, and there were a lot of people I'd never even seen before. And still, this is what happened. Hello, Mrs. Maynard. I'm Henry Morgan.
Who?
Morgan, Mr. Maynard Fongney, I mean, your husband...
Henry Morgan, the radio man, of course. Oh, come in, come in. Won't everyone be thrilled? Oh, Mrs. Fosdick.
Yes?
This is Henry Morgan.
Who?
Morgan, Henry.
Oh, I'm delighted to meet you, Mr. Henry.
It's Morgan, Henry Morgan, you know, on the radio.
Oh, the radio. Oh, the voice does sound familiar. Say something, Mr. Muggin.
Say something. Say something. Push-pull, click-click.
What?
Push-pull, click-click. How now, brown cow?
Brown cow. Well, I simply must be leaving, Mrs. Maynard. This lovely party. Nice to meet you, Mr. Mutton. Push-pull, brown cow.
Come on, Henry. I must introduce you to everyone. Oh, Mr. Cantwell.
Oh, yes.
I want you to meet Henry Morgan. You know Mr. Morgan, of course.
Oh, surely, of course. How are you?
Fine.
I've been hearing a lot about you.
Really?
Yes. What are you doing these days?
Oh, well, the same thing.
Oh, bully, bully. How is the old bunch?
Okay, I guess. Which bunch do you mean?
Tell me something. How is good old...
He went to California.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought he was still...
No, they closed down.
Well, 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 bless my soul. Anyway, it's nice to
Not
have...
Not at all.
Yeah. Oh, isn't it nice when old friends get together?
Yes, delightful.
Well, come on now, Henry. I want you to meet someone else. Oh, there's Dr. Peterson. Doctor.
Hi, Al.
This is Henry Morgan.
Who?
Dr. Peterson, this is the Henry Morgan.
Oh, there are many of them?
No, Doctor, it's a common name. There's a Frank Morgan.
Frank Morgan, now there's a funny fellow. Don't you agree, Mr.
Peterson.
Yeah. Frank Morgan, yes, funny fellow. Every time he laughs, that funny laugh of his, I laugh.
That funny laugh of yours?
Doctor, this Morgan, Henry, is well known on the radio.
Oh, really? The voice does sound familiar. Say something.
Well, push, pull, click, click.
Oh, of course, there's no mistaking that resonant voice. The fat man, aren't you?
Maybe a little.
Oh, there's something I want to ask you, fat man. In your last case, how did you know that the murderer had the knife concealed in his pants?
What?
The knife. How did you know that he had it in his pants?
Well, before the program, we took his pants off.
I see. Well, I must be off. Goodbye, Mrs. Maynard. Goodbye, fat man.
Goodbye, madman.
I'm very embarrassed, Henry, but there's one man here who's very intelligent. He's a terrific fan of yours.
Oh, that's nice.
That's him pouring the punch over his head. Jerry.
Yes?
Jerry, this is Henry Morgan.
Who?
Henry Morgan, you know.
Oh, Henry Morgan. Oh, boy, am I glad to meet you. Everything you say kills me. No kidding.
How do you do?
What he says, it's the way he says it. Say something else, Henry.
Well, it's raining, you know.
You hear that? You know, it's raining, you know. As if there were some people who don't know. Oh, that thinking. I can't stand anymore. Hey, Mabel, come here. This will kill you.
Oh, Henry, there's a lady who seems to know you.
I certainly hope so.
Oh, Margaret, this is Henry Morgan.
Who?
But Mother! Boom. Here is Teddy Katsoftis. Teddy's been with us before because he sings in Greek, which gives the program a nice touch. And besides, it doesn't cost us too much because he plays his own accompaniment on the tuba. Tonight, mandolin.
Θέλω να σ' εδώ κρυφά ένα βράδυ, μα να μην το μάθει αυτός κανείς. Κι όπως θα έργω πέφτει το σκοτάδι, θα σε περιμένω να φανείς. Σ' αγαπώ, σ' αγαπώ, σ' αγαπώ. Σ' αγαπώ, σ' αγαπώ, σ' αγαπώ. Στον δρόμο της Μανδηλής που τα ψάρια παίζουν flying fishes και τα κολοκύθια μεγαλώνουν. Στα κύματα της θαλάσσης που ο κύριος Φενιώνης θα ψαρεύει.
We have invited the eminent scientist, Dr. Henry von Morgan, to say a few thousand words. Doctor?
Sure. I would like to discuss the Eversharp Schick injector razor for Kobelauers. The Eversharp razor is frightening. The Eversharp changes blades automatically. So simple a tiny child could do it if he was shaving. As a matter of fact, any tiny child with $1.25 could buy one. I don't care. The Eversharp injector razor comes in a little box with 20 blades there in it also. And it makes the shaving quicker, hook adequate. Absolutely is a fact that hundreds of users are using it. And the reason that all these people is using the Eversharp chicken checker razor is that they got one. Just be so kindly, you remember the name, Eversharp Chic Injector Razor, which is on sale at all kinds of places too hideous to mention.
Thank you. Well, last night was one of those things. I stayed up late again listening to the radio. Stayed up very late listening to one of my favorite radio shows, The All Night Disc Jockey. I don't know how those fellas stay awake, but every night, millions of people stay awake to find out how they stay awake. Anyway, this is the way this guy sounded.
This is station WXC, the friendly station. The station that loves you to pieces. Bringing you jiving into heaven from midnight till 7. And here's your all-night pal, Chuckles Morgan.
Hello again, guys and gals. This is Chuckles Morgan. Before I play the first record, I got a little request here from Milty G's wife, celebrating Milty G's homecoming from the Army. He was discharged 3 years ago in Paris and just got home. Well, folks want to hear that new hit song, Your Eyes Match Garbo's, Baby, I Wish They'd Match Each Other. Fine little record here. It's played by that great maestro from the South, Phil Hamhock, and his orchestra, featuring Phil on the vocals.
Chloe!
Fine. That's great, Phil. Now, I got a little request here. Got a little request from some of the boys at good old Sing Sing Prison. They want to hear their favorite, Handle Me With Kid Gloves, Honey. They don't leave fingerprints. Coming right up, boys, but first a brief transcription.
I have stringy, shabby, sloppy hair.
Ladies, do you have stringy, shabby, sloppy hair? When you run your comb through your hair, do you find your comb has a nicer hairdo than you do? Then use Gloves shampoo, made out of pure oil of oatmeal. Gloves is the only shampoo that comes already cooked. Listen to what one regular Gloves shampoo user says.
I have stringy, shabby, sloppy hair.
Fine. Now a little, relative. I have, little number put together by that master of the rumba, Xavier Gatt, and his 30 Spanish onions. The vocal chorus is by Miguelito Klein, and he sings that romantic old favorite, My Sweet Little Alice Blue Nose. Take it, Mig. Miguelito, he's a real Spanish cucaracha. Now, before our next number, a brief transcription.
Hot. Hot. That's what Callahan's Turkish bath is. Hot.
Hear that, gang? Callahan's Turkish bath is hot. The place where good fellows meet.
Remember the special offer, half price to real Turks. Get our special rubdown. Our special rubdown, you're untouched by human hands. Callahan does it himself. But remember, we are not responsible for bodies left over 30 days.
Mmm, hot. Mmm, hot. That's what Callahan's Turkish bath is. Mmm, hot.
Now, guys and gals, I got a little request here from KG, Harry P., Ruth S., Freddie L., Charlotte Z., Frank T., Patsy F., and Carol M. They want to hear Sweet Georgia B. And we have it here, played by Spike Bones, and this is a special arrangement for piano and stool. The vocal chorus will be sung by the incomparable Hilda Borsch. And here is Sweet Georgia B.
Georgia B.
Lost his B there for a second, didn't he? Oh, Spike, that was trip. Now on the list, here's that old favorite Western, Give Me My Boots and My Bottle, Yip-I-Yay. But first, a brief transcription.
Oh, yes, it's fun. Real fun. Yes, indeed. Sitting on Feinschreiber's feathers is fun. Especially when they're in a Feinschreiber fluffy feather pillow. Feinschreiber's feathers are sterilized. They are plucked from boiled chickens. Feinschreiber's feathers have many uses. One, pillows. And many other uses. Listen to what the average person in your block is saying.
What time is it?
Which way is the fish market?
It's a beautiful day.
I feel nauseous.
Yes, everyone's talking about Feinschreiber's feathers. Try sleeping on Feinschreiber's feathers. You'll be tickled to death.
Now, guys and gals, Chuckles Morgan brings to you the final disc of the night. That old favorite, Every Little Breeze Seems to Whisper Max. Oh, but I see my time is up. Sorry, this is Chuckles Morgan. Signing off. Remember, I'll be here tomorrow night with... We received a number of letters recently from listeners who wonder why we never give anything away on this program. Here's a typical letter from a man who writes...
Yeah. I've been listening to your program week after week for 2 weeks. And I never hear you give nothing away. This is the way to run a radio show? It's everything coming in, nothing going out, huh? Well, just let me give you a tip. For the past couple of weeks, I've been shaving with a rusty pair of scissors. And I get by. A word to the wise is sufficient. Hey, Jack?
Well, after receiving the letter... After I got the letter, I decided it was about time we did run a contest. The most popular kind of contest at present appears to be the kind in which people are asked to identify a mysterious voice. And with the hot weather coming on... That's the kind of entertainment we're going to give you right now.
Can you identify the mystery voice?
Listen carefully. See if you can master the mysterious mutterings of the mystery voice. Come in, voice.
When it's 5 o'clock in Shanghai, it's Wednesday in Alaska. And when it's noon at 2 o'clock, it's leap year in Nebraska.
Friends, do you know who that is? That's a voice of someone you all know. Can't you place it? Listen again. Come in, voice.
When it's 5 o'clock in Shanghai, it's Wednesday in Alaska. And when it's noon at 2 o'clock, it's leap year in Nebraska.
The prize for identifying that voice is a brand new Buskirk automobile. Here at our microphones, we have 3 people picked at random from 200 people picked at random. And they're going to try for the grand prize. And here is our first contestant. Your name, please.
Mrs. Ingrid Sludge.
Now, Mrs. Sludge, who do you think is the mystery voice?
William Shakespeare.
Mrs. Sludge, Shakespeare is dead.
Well, we all gotta go sometime.
Thanks for a good try, Mrs. Sludge. And here is your free package of pollen. May we have the next contestant, if you please?
My name is Rancid Scobo.
Mr. Scobo, who do you think is the mystery voice?
Henry Morgan.
Now, what makes you think that I'm the mystery voice?
Well, they always pick some guy nobody ever heard of.
Wrong, but here's a sharp right cross to the jaw for you, sir. Next contestant.
When it's 5 o'clock in Shanghai, it's Wednesday in Azazelazga.
Why, it's the mystery voice himself. Tell me, how did you get in here with the contestants?
Somebody pushed me.
Well, I'm sorry, but you're disqualified from guessing since you are the mystery voice.
Oh, no, you don't, Morgan. You accepted me as the contestant, and I'll sue you for every razor you got. All I gotta do is name the mystery voice, and I get the great big grand prize. Yes, sir.
Well, come on, then. Out with it. Who are you?
Isn't that awful? I forget.
If any of you listeners... Oh, you see, that wasn't the end. We always get rooked that way somehow. The end was something like, if you know who the mystery voice is, send your answers to the Eversharp Company, Chicago. Remember, we give no prizes. Why should we? We know who it is. We should have left it out. I was wrong. Bernie Green put together a thing for tonight, which needs about a half hour of explanation. See, we had that thing earlier in the show about disc jockeys, and it gave Bernie an idea for a number. So he wrote a thing, and he calls it the Fabulous Disc Jockey. And it's his idea of how the, suppose that all the records a disc jockey plays in a single night began to run together somehow, the different tunes and the different orchestras, into a sort of a montage, I guess the word is. Maybe it would sound like Bernie's thing, the Fabulous Disc Jockey. Start the record, please.
Tonight, Eversharp, manufacturers of Eversharp Chic Injector Razors and Eversharp Pens and Repeater Pencils, has an urgent message about CA Pens. Urgent, you bet it is. You'd better hurry, hurry, hurry to your Eversharp dealers if you want to get in on the greatest pen buys in Eversharp history. Eversharp's sensational CA Pen sale is now in its second week, with prices slashed up to 60%. Most stores still have the full line, including all styles, colors, and combinations, from 14-karat gold-filled to stainless steel and smart modern plastics. But they're going fast. Listen.
I am the $25, 14-karat, gold-filled, Eversharp CA repeater pen.
Now, $9.95.
I am the $15, Eversharp CA pen with 14-karat, gold-filled cap.
Now, $7.95.
I am the $8.75, Eversharp CA pen.
Now, $5.95.
I am the $6.95, Eversharp CA pen.
Now, $3.95. Here is the opportunity you've been looking for to buy your birthday, wedding, graduation gifts, and business gifts. But don't wait. Remember, this sale is for a limited time only. So be at your dealer's early. Compare. Comparison proves. Give Eversharp, and you save on the finest.
I am the Eversharp 995 pen.
Reduced. People are asking more questions today than ever before and getting fewer answers. Now, in an effort to alleviate this shortage of answers, we bring you now the man who knows everything, the Question Man. And here he is, the Question Man.
Good evening.
Our first question, sir, comes from Mr. K.L. of Buffalo, who writes, when introducing one man to another, is it correct to say, Mr. Jones, meet Mr. Smith?
No, you should use their real names.
And here's a letter. Here's a letter from Mr. T.O. of Miami, who asks, is the long side of a right triangle longer than the two short sides, or are the two short sides shorter than the long one?
No, quite the opposite. The long side merely appears to be longer because the short sides appear to be shorter, which is actually the case. If this is not clear, send for my free booklet entitled 10,000 Facts Which Are Not Clear.
And here's a question from Mr. Mosaic of Lexington Avenue. He writes, some cigarette companies claim that tobacco's harmful effects are caused by tobacco dust. Others blame tar and rosin. And still others blame the inferior tobaccos purchased by their rivals. What is the truth of the matter?
According to scientific tests, most of tobacco's harmful effects are caused by the use of tobacco.
And our last question, sir, comes from Mrs. C.M. of Medfield, who asks, what is the best way to curry a chicken?
The best way to curry a chicken is in a shopping bag.
That was the Question Man, brought to you every so often as a public service. They're yours again, Eversharp Chic Injector Blades for the world's fastest, safest, smoothest shaves. Just insert the automatic blade changer in your Eversharp Chic Injector Razor, push, pull, click, click, and you're ready to shave. 20 blades, 75 cents at good stores everywhere. This is Charles Irving saying goodnight for Eversharp. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The Henry Morgan Show, program number 42 in the series, from June 18th, 1947, on ABC. We'll remain with the ABC Radio Network and the year 1947 for our final offering this hour. But first, I'd like to remind you that you are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the Radio Theater, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website for much more info about the show and also streaming audio of this and previous episodes. qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is program number 1808. As promised, another offering from the ABC Radio Archives, an episode of Famous Jury Trials. Dramatizations based on actual court cases throughout history. This broadcast, program number 337 in this long-running series, from May 3rd, 1947, The People versus Radin.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Opening session, part three.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Famous Jury Trials. Fictionized dramatizations of cases typical of many taken from actual court history. The dramatic story of our courts. where rich and poor alike, guilty and innocent, stand before the bar of justice.
Court is in session. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
People versus Raiden.
The People versus Raiden, an intriguing case through which the number 21 shuttles like a weird symbol of destiny. The story begins with 21 and ends with 21. The beginning, January 21st.
Hit me.
5-11 showing.
Hit me again.
6-17 showing.
I'll stand.
One card, please.
9-17 showing.
The snick and slap of cards dealt on a green beige table, the drone of the dealer's voice, other voices, one at a time, rising above the subdued murmur to call for a card. Chips raked in, chips passed to players, each move part of a kaleidoscopic pattern that holds the people around the table spellbound. From adjoining rooms of the rambling villa on the outskirts of the city come the click of dice and the whir of roulette wheels, but here in this room, blackjack is the game. Here everything revolves around the number 21.
Yes, I'll take one.
10-16 showing.
Fix me. Hit me.
4-11 showing.
Again.
6-17 showing.
I'll stand.
One card, please.
9-12 showing.
That's enough.
Paying 19.
Uh-oh, beats me.
Pay me. 20.
Look at that.
Did you ever see such luck? That's fantastic.
Make your bets. All bets.
Tommy Abbott, the society playboy, is having a sensational run of luck. He wins time after time. As the chips pile up in front of him, an attractive young woman slips away from the blackjack table and goes to a telephone booth in the hall.
This is Alma. I'm at the Sunset Club.
Anything interesting?
The blackjack game is very interesting tonight.
Ed and I will be over in a little while. Hang around when we get there. Then you know what to do. Understand?
I understand. I'll be looking for you.
Time passes. The blackjack game goes on. Many players drop out to watch the exciting play of Tommy Abbott. Tensely, they follow...
Hit me.
6-14 showing.
Again.
5-17 showing.
No more.
Paying 20.
Pay me. 21.
Why don't I have that kind of eye? Once at Monte Carlo, I saw a man.
The game goes on. The dealer's face remains an expressionless mask, but his fingers tremble nervously as he handles the cards. A hard-faced man shoots a quick glance at a tall, slender spectator on the other side of the table. Unnoticed, they edge away from the crowd and meet in a corner of the room. With barely any motion of his lips, the hard-faced individual says,
"Looks good, huh, Slim?"
"Yeah, those stacks of blue chips ought to be worth at least 12 grand.
All blue chips, huh? Eh? That's the kind of dough I like to see.
Deuce. 9.
I'll take another.
4-13.
And one more.
3-16 showing.
Now, that's enough. I'll stand.
What about you, Mr. Abbott?
Hit me.
7-13 showing.
I'll stand.
Paying 20.
Then pay me. 21.
He did it again.
Can you tie that if I didn't see it with my own eyes?
Make your bet.
Hey, Slim. Slip out and wait in the car. I'll stay here till he cashes in.
Okay, Ed. I'll be waiting.
Shortly after that, Tommy Abbott leaves the gambling house, gets into his car, and drives toward the city. Not far behind him trail the dimmed headlights of another car, a car containing two people.
Around the next turn, when he comes to that soft shoulder of the road, that's the place. I'll crowd his car off the road. You fire a couple of shots to get him rattled. He'll crash into a tree. It'll look like an accident. Okay, here goes. Now.
The early morning newscasts and papers announced that Thomas Abbott had been murdered and his killer, Edward Raiden, apprehended. The story went on to say that the police had not been fooled by what was expected to look like an automobile accident. And now, Edward Raiden, his face hard and defiant, sits in court and hears the prosecutor tell the jury...
Human life is sacred. That law is the very foundation of civilized society. There are times when men are so overcome by emotions and passions that they transgress that law. In such cases, we temper justice with mercy. But there are no mitigating considerations in this case. This is clearly the foulest of all crimes. Murder for profit. Edward Raiden killed Thomas Abbott in cold blood. As this trial progresses, you will learn that Abbott wasn't the only victim of Raiden's bloodlust. As this trial progresses, you will agree that Edward Raiden must pay with his life for his crime.
Is the state ready to call its first witness?
It is, Your Honor.
Proceed.
Will Stefan Zadig take the stand, please?
Stefan Zadig, take the stand. Raise your right hand. Sound swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, self regard.
I do.
Be seated.
Now, Mr. Zadig, you were the blackjack dealer at the Sunset Club on January 21st of this year?
Yes.
Did you know the deceased, Thomas Abbott?
Oh, yes. He came to the club frequently.
And do you know the defendant, Edward Raiden?
Only by sight. I've seen him at the club a few times.
Well, was he there the night Thomas Abbott was killed?
Yes, he was. I remember seeing him as I was talking to Mr. Abbott. That was when Mr. Abbott was getting ready to leave the place after almost breaking my gate.
Oh, men may come and men may go, but Stephen... Your deadpan goes on forever. Show some emotion, old boy. You've just lost $21,000.
Breaks of the game. I'm glad it was you who won it, Mr. Abbott.
Oh, I haven't really won anything, you know. This is just a small part of the money I've lost here from time to time. But I get a kick out of getting some of it back. It isn't the money, you know, it's
Mr.
the...
Mr. Abbott, may I make a suggestion?
Too, if it'll make you any happier.
Why not leave the money with the cashier? $21,000 is a lot of money to carry around at night.
Oh, $21,000 is a lot of money to carry around any time, old boy.
It would be much safer for you to leave the money with us. You can pick it up during the day.
Oh, no. I've won it, and I'm going to take it with me. That's half the thrill of winning.
As you wish, sir.
Besides, if anybody else gets as lucky as I was, you'll be broke before I get back. No, I'll take it.
And did he do that, Mr. Zadig?
Yes. He took his money and left.
Did you see the defendant at that time?
Yes, he followed Mr. Abbott.
Thank you. Your witness.
Mr. Zadig, how do you know that the defendant followed Mr. Abbott?
Well, he left the room right after him.
Oh, that could mean that he went to the dice room or to the roulette wheel or to any one of several other rooms, couldn't it?
Yes.
Then why do you unhesitatingly state that Edward Raiden followed Tom Abbott?
Well...
I'll tell you why. Because you made a deal with the district attorney. If you turned state's evidence and did everything possible to convict Raiden, the district attorney agreed not to prosecute you and your colleagues for operating a gambling house.
If it pleases the court, that is not true.
Do you expect the jury to believe that this gambler came here of his own free will, knowing that every word of his testimony makes him liable to fine and imprisonment? The truth is that the police department and the district attorney's office are under pressure to find the killer of the socially prominent Tom Abbott. So Edward Raiden was selected as the one to frame for the crime. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, listen to the flimsy evidence the state is presenting. According to the dealer, Raiden left the blackjack room shortly after Abbott died, but that doesn't tell us where he went. He might have gone anywhere.
I'll prove that he followed Tom Abbott. Will James Williams take the stand, please? That's all for the moment, Mr. Zadig.
James Williams, take the stand. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, have your guard. Be seated.
Now, Mr. Williams, you were employed at the Sunset Club on January 21st?
Yes, sir. I was a doorman.
Were you on duty the night Thomas Abbott was killed?
Yes, sir.
Did you see Mr. Abbott leave the club?
Yes, sir, I did. I ordered one of the attendants to bring his car to the door.
Did you see anyone else at that time?
Yes, sir. That man.
You mean the defendant?
Yes, sir, the defendant. He left the club at the same time.
Did you order his car for him?
No, sir. No, sir. He walked down the driveway and a car on the road picked him up.
And which way did it go?
Follow Mr. Abbott.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, now you know that Edward Radin didn't go to one of the other game rooms. You have proof that he followed Tom Abbott.
Are you through with the witness?
Yes. He's all yours.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, who coached you to tell the story you just told?
Objection.
Sustained.
Mr. Williams, how do you know that the defendant followed Tom Abbott?
Well, the car he got into went the same way.
You mean in the same direction?
Yes, sir.
What direction was that?
East, toward town.
Well, don't practically all cars leaving the Sunset Club travel east toward the city?
Yes, sir, they do.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, simply because the defendant's car turned east, the direction taken by over 90% of the patrons of the Sunset Club, the witness tells you that it followed the deceased.
Well, didn't it?
By that kind of reasoning, the people in every car that traveled eastward can be suspected of having killed Tom Abbott.
The state doesn't suspect that the defendant killed Tom Abbott. We know it to be a fact. And for proof, I call Alma West to testify. You may step down, Mr. Williams.
Alma yes. West to the stand.
A shapely blonde in a sleek, form-fitting dress walked up the aisle. A subdued murmur of masculine admiration accompanied her to the witness stand, but it died abruptly when she turned, and the spectators beheld the look she directed at the defendant. It was 24-carat hatred, so stark and intense it sent chills through the assemblage. There was a dramatic pause. Then the district attorney broke the silence with a few words that started a barrage of staccato questions and answers that rang through the courtroom like a volley of one, two, one.
Miss West, who killed Thomas Abbott?
Edward Radin.
How do you know that?
Because in a way, I helped to plan it.
Why?
It was part of our business.
And what was your business?
Hijacking people.
Would you please explain the details to the jury?
We specialized in sticking up gambling house customers. I circulated around. When I spotted a big winner, I let my partners know about it. They did the rest.
And who were your partners?
Edward Radin and Slim... That is, Richard Everett.
Well, now, did you inform them that Tom Abbott had won a lot of money at the Sunset Club?
Yes.
Did you know they were going to kill him?
People who get money at the point of a gun are bound to kill somebody sometime.
Well, did they kill any of the other people they had hijacked?
No, they just held them up. But Tom Abbott was the kind that would try to put up a fight. Radin always said that the only thing to do with that kind is kill them before they have a chance to start an argument.
I see. Well, now, Miss West, I want you to tell the jury exactly what you did on the night of January 27th.
The courtroom was spellbound by the sheer coldness of Alma West's recital. Without a flicker of emotion, she related how she watched Tommy Abbott's winnings accumulate and how she notified her colleagues about it, knowing that it would probably result in his death.
Then when Radin and Slim got to the club, I left.
Where did you go, Miss West?
To Slim Everett's apartment.
Did anything happen there?
I waited for Slim. I was kind of tired, so I went to the bedroom and took a nap. I woke up with a start. There were voices in the living room. It was Slim and Radin. Radin was saying...
Well, I'll be a...
Sweater, Ed.
One of the buttons on my overcoat's gone.
Uh-uh. Where'd you lose it?
Well, I...
Was it loose?
No.
Then it must have come off.
Yeah, yeah. When Abbott made a grab for me and I had to sap him.
That's swell. Just swell. Now the cops will know he wasn't killed in an accident. They got something to work on. A button off of a navy blue overcoat.
Well, let them work on it. Where'll it lead them? Must be at least a million other guys in the city with navy blue bennies.
Yeah, but those other fellas, they've got all their buttons.
Hey, is that a crack?
Oh, cut it out. This is no time to get sensitive.
Okay, okay. Well, don't get excited about that button. Won't be missing long.
But you can't go to a tailor to have one sewed on. The cops will be looking for just that.
Who said anything about going to a tailor? There's a whole box full of buttons in the basement of a joint I know. I'm bound to be the right size. I'll sew it on myself.
But, Ed, are you sure?
Oh, stop worrying, will you? Your face is as red as your necktie.
My tie's green.
All right, so it's green. Maybe that's the color your face will be when I spill the real news to you.
What news?
Just this. Starting right now, we're changing the way we operate.
Go on. I'm listening.
We don't split the take three ways anymore.
No?
No. Alma doesn't get a third like she's been getting.
Why not?
Because I said
so. Look, Ed, we've been doing all right. Let's not louse things up.
We got 21 grand tonight. Right?
Right.
That's 7,000 apiece. Right?
Wrong. Alma doesn't get a third, neither do you.
What?
I'm making myself the head of this outfit. I'm taking 60%. You and Alma split what's left.
Don't start anything like that. It isn't healthy.
I'm not starting anything I can't finish.
Why,
don't
you...
reach for your gun, not when you, if you want to live.
You killed a man tonight, yeah, and it's gone to your head. All of a sudden, you're a big shot. Jesse James and Chip the Blood and John Dillinger all rolled into one. Well, big shot, I'm going...
You're not going to do anything anymore, Slim. You should have remembered I'm a fast shot.
Then he left the apartment. When I heard the door close, I went into the living room. Slim was dead. That's when I phoned the police and told them that Raiden had shot Slim.
Thank you, Miss West. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, now you know who killed Thomas Abbott. If there was any doubt about it, the testimony of this witness has dispelled
it. May it please the court, the defendant is being tried on the charge of having killed Thomas Abbott, not Richard Everett. The testimony about Slim Everett's death has absolutely no bearing on this case. That testimony, regardless of whether true or false, and we're not concerned with that at this time, was presented for two purposes. First, to confuse the jury, and second, to prejudice the jury against Edward Raiden. Under the circumstances, I move that this be declared a mistrial.
Your Honor, counsel had the privilege of objecting to the witness's testimony when she first mentioned the murder of Richard Everett.
It was impossible...
His failure to do so was intentional.
The lawyers wrangled. They quoted authorities and they cited precedents. And with each argument and each passing minute, the jury became more and more distracted and confused. Veteran court reporters realized that the prosecutor knew this but couldn't do anything about it. He had to continue fighting to prevent the declaration of a mistrial. The reporters realized that the defense counsel was aware of this, too, and was purposely prolonging the interlude to dissipate the full impact of Alma West's testimony. Finally, the judge ruled...
Defense counsel's motion for a mistrial is denied.
Exception?
But the jury is instructed to disregard the testimony pertaining to Richard Everett's death. This trial is concerned solely with determining whether or not the defendant killed Thomas Abbott as...
The lawyers' arguments had consumed so much time that court was recessed until morning. When it reconvened, Alma West, cold and hard as before, returned to the stand, and the defense began its cross-examination.
Miss West, yesterday you told this court that on January 21st, when you left the Sunset Club, you went directly to Slim Everett's apartment.
That's right.
What means of transportation did you use?
I took a cab.
You remember the driver's name?
No.
You remember his number?
No.
You recall the number of his cab?
No.
Do you remember what kind of cab it was?
No.
The questions and the defiant answers crackled like lightning flashes in a summer storm. Hour after hour, the relentless cross-examination went on. Everyone in the courtroom was tense. Obviously, the case hinged on Alma West's testimony. Unless her story was discredited, the defendant was doomed. The defense counsel seemed to be tiring rapidly. His questions became perfunctory and lukewarm.
And, Miss West, you say you left the Sunset Club in a taxi?
I did.
Did this doorman summon it for you?
No.
Why didn't he?
He was busy taking care of some other people.
I see. Alma West, why did you kill Slim Everett?
Objection. This trial concerns the death of Thomas Abbott.
Sustained.
In that case, Alma West, why did you kill Thomas Abbott?
Objection. The witness is not on trial.
Sustained.
No, the witness... She's not on trial, nor is there any likelihood that she will be. And why? Because she made a deal with the district attorney. In return for turning state's witness, she is to go free for her admitted complicity in the murder of Tommy Abbott.
That is not true, Your Honor. The state did not make a deal with the witness.
Ah? Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen of the jury? The state did not offer Alma West immunity for her testimony. Then why did she willingly implicate herself as an accessory to the fact in the murder charge? I'm sure she can give a good reason for doing that. Let's see what she says. Miss West, why are you jeopardizing your own freedom in an effort to convict Edward Raiden?
That is none of your business.
Young woman, this is a court of law. Please conduct yourself accordingly. Counselor, will you repeat the question?
Gladly, Your Honor. Miss West, why are you jeopardizing your own freedom in an effort to convict Edward Raiden? Well, why don't you answer?
Miss West, unless you answer, you will be considered in contempt of court.
So I'm in contempt of court.
Your Honor, I'm sure the witness doesn't understand the effect of her attitude on the state's case.
Well, I don't want to do anything to hurt the state's case. I'll answer the question, even though I know that Radin's lawyer will try to twist and distort it into something ugly. Slim Everett and I were in love. I want Radin to die for killing him. I want that more than anything else in the world. I'm not afraid of going to jail. I don't care what happens to me. I don't care about anything anymore now that Slim is dead.
Very touching, Miss West. Very touching indeed. You should have been an actress. You just gave a moving performance, but at the right time, I'll show the jury that you used the wrong script.
That ended the activity for the day. The first witness to take the stand the following morning was Terence Cassidy, a detective of the homicide squad. He reviewed his work in investigating the death of Thomas Abbott. Then the district attorney asked,
Mr. Cassidy, how did you know that the deceased was not killed when his car crashed into a tree?
Because I found a button clutched in his right hand. It wasn't from his own clothes, so that meant it belonged to someone who was there just before Abbott died.
Yes?
If it had been a friend or someone who had tried to render first aid, he would have reported the accident to the police. Since we had no such report, it was logical to believe that the button came from the clothes of someone who had attacked Abbott.
I see, thank you. Now, will you tell the jury, is this the button you found in Tommy Abbott's hand?
It is.
Your Honor, I present it as Exhibit A for the state.
In the absence of any objections, let it be so marked.
Now, Mr. Cassidy, did you find anything else at the scene of death?
Yes, there was a slug from a .32 caliber gun buried in the left rear fender.
Is this it?
Yes, sir.
I offer the state's Exhibit B.
So mark it.
Now, Mr. Cassidy, isn't it true that a .32 caliber bullet was also the cause of Richard Everett's death?
I object. The question is immaterial, incompetent, and irrelevant.
Sustained.
That's all, Mr. Cassidy. Your witness, Counselor.
Mr. Cassidy, from your experience, what kind of people generally own a .32 caliber revolver?
Usually women, because it's a small, lightweight gun.
Now, I ask the jury to remember that. Now, Mr. Cassidy, when the defendant was arrested, was a paraffin test made of his hand?
It was.
The purpose of a paraffin test is to find traces of gunpowder indicating that that particular hand fired a gun within the preceding 48 hours, isn't it?
That's right.
What did the test you gave Edward Radin show?
There was no gunpowder on his hand.
That's all. You may step down.
Well, one moment, Mr. Cassidy. One moment. Isn't it possible to fire a gun without leaving gunpowder traces on the hand?
Why, sure, by wearing a glove.
By wearing a glove. And people do wear gloves in the kind of weather we have in January. Now, one more question. Haven't you ever known of men using a .32 caliber revolver?
Of course. Come to think of it, it's the gun used in most banks.
Thank you. Now you may step down. Your Honor, and ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I don't propose to waste your time with oratorical flourish. The state has presented its case. The evidence proves that Edward Radin and his confederates planned to kill and rob Thomas Abbott. That Radin followed Abbott when he left the Sunset Club on January 21st. That Abbott was killed. And that Radin killed. And frankly, the state has withheld one bit of evidence. But it will be used if Edward Radin dares take the stand. And with that, the state rests.
Is the defense ready to present its case?
We are, Your Honor.
Proceed, please.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I can tell you about the mysterious piece of evidence withheld by the district attorney. It's the defendant's overcoat. I can also tell you that Exhibit A, the button found in Tommy Abbott's hand, will match the buttons of that coat. For that matter, it'll match the buttons of a million other navy blue overcoats. I don't know why the state should want to present it as evidence only if the defendant takes the stand, unless the district attorney is using that as a bluff to keep Edward Radin from testifying in his own behalf. However, an innocent man has nothing to fear, so I'm going to call that bluff. Will Edward Radin take the stand?
Edward Radin, take the stand.
Raise your right hand. You saw me swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, help you, God. Be seated.
Mr. Radin, tell the jury, do Did you plan to rob and, if necessary, kill Thomas Abbott as described by Alma West?
Yes, I did.
Did you do it?
No.
What made you change your plan?
I didn't change them. They were changed for me.
Tell the jury what happened.
I followed Abbott out of the Sunset Club, all right. Got into his car and drove off. I started for my car where my partner Slim Everett was supposed to wait for me. That's when my plans were changed.
How?
Slim drove away before I reached the car.
There are the facts, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. The simple and complete story of why Edward Rayton is not guilty of killing Thomas Abbott. I have only two more questions. First, Mr. Rayton, did you notice if there was anyone in the car with Slim Everett?
Yeah. Alma West was in it.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know why I said she gave a good performance, but her lines were from the wrong script. Now, Mr. Rayton, a second and last question. Were there any buttons missing from your overcoat when the police took it from you?
No, it had all its buttons.
Thank you. Your witness, Mr. District Attorney.
First, let me assure counsel that the defendant's overcoat has the number of buttons it's supposed to have.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Now, by the way, Mr. Rayton, what color is that coat?
Blue. Navy blue.
And what color is my necktie?
Navy blue.
For your information, Mr. Rayton, it is brown. Dark brown. And that means, Mr. Rayton, that you are colorblind.
Okay, so I'm colorblind. So what?
So when you sewed on a button to replace the one Tommy Abbott had torn off your overcoat, you put a brown button on a navy blue coat. And here it is, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, one brown button, just one, on a navy blue coat.
I didn't do it. I didn't sew that button on. A tailor did it. It was done long before Abbott was killed.
No, Rayton, a tailor didn't sew on that button. First, I've never heard of a colorblind tailor. And second, the brown button is fastened on with the wrong kind of thread. No tailor would attempt to sew on a button with 21-gauge thread.
There was the number 21 again. It completed the evidence against Edward Rayton. When the jury had filed back into the box, the woman who was serving as foreman announced the verdict as
guilty of murder in the first degree.
But that wasn't the finale of the case that began and ended with 21. That came later when the judge pronounced
Edward Rayton, it is the sentence of this court that you be removed to the state penitentiary and there executed according to the laws of this state. Said execution to take place on the 21st day of June 1947.
And that's the end.
And also the end of another famous jury trial. These exciting dramatizations are brought to you each week by the American Broadcasting Company. Next week, we will present the trial of the People versus Stevens.
Court is adjourned.
All names, times, and places mentioned on tonight's program are fictional. Famous Jury Trials is produced and directed by Wiley Adams. Tonight's script was written by Len Finger. Your narrator was Norman Rose. The cast included Alice Reinhart, James Van Dyke, Raymond Edward Johnson, Bernard Lenro, Joe DeSantis, Sidney Paul, and Ralph Camargo. Your announcer, Bill Crago.
And that does it for this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.